The Lions clinch a playoff spot with a 34-31 win against the Packers last night. And Dan Campbell still continuously putting his balls on the field. It's another Friday here in the NFL season. It's the Ruski Picks episode for week 14. This is the Full Ruski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Ruski Podcast for another Friday edition, Week 14 Friday Game Picks edition of the Fumble Ruski Podcast by Powered 18 Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Chris Kostich. He's Adam Wright. He's CJ Medeiros. Got a good lineup for you today. Not a great week of football, unfortunately, but we start out with probably debatably the best Thursday night game of the season. The Lions beating the Packers 34-31 last night on Thursday night football, clinching a playoff spot and moving themselves a little bit further ahead in that number one spot, just trying desperately to pull away from the Eagles. But the Eagles are playing the Panthers this week, so it's what are you going to do? But Packers, good God, Josh Jacobs, three touchdowns in this game. Ever since the bye week, he's been going ridiculous. Christian Watson, four catches, 114 yards, and that was really the only good receiving performance. Jaden Reed, only one target for Jaden Reed. No catches, no yards. You get the picture. The Lions, six different receivers with five or more catches. Jameson Williams, five catches, 80 yards. Tim Patrick was the big story in this game, and probably one of the more heartwarming stories or heartfelt stories this season, dealing with injuries and other bullshit the entirety of his career, his short career, ended up with six catches, 43 yards, and two touchdowns on the eve of his late father's birthday. And after the game, he said, you know, Dad was watching over me. That was the long and the short of it, really. There's not much else to really say about that. Jared Goff had a good game, 32 for 41, three touchdowns, one interception, 283 on the day. Only sacked one time. There was only two sacks total in this game, one for each side. And it really came down to one play and one play only. And Dan Campbell going for it on fourth and one with a little bit over 40 seconds to go. Tie game. Really, all you had to do is kick the field goal, and it's over. But Dan Campbell's like, no, I don't want to give Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur the ball back by any means necessary. And this is also already after they had gone for it on fourth down and didn't convert on it earlier on in the game as well. Go for it on fourth and one. They get it. Kill the rest of the clock as the Packers were out of timeouts. They kill the rest of the clock down to 2 seconds, and they kick the game-winning field goal. Look, I know that we always say that it's going to come back and bite Dan Campbell in the ass, but by God, I mean, if they don't convert on this fourth down, and they almost did it because Jared Goff amazingly somehow didn't fuck up the handoff, he tripped over his own man, fell to a knee, still got the handoff off, and they convert on fourth down, but, you know, it's the old adage, if they don't convert on fourth down, then he's going to be looked at as a dumbass, which to my standard, it's like, well, that's just Dan Campbell. He's an aggressive motherfucker. If Nick Sirianni were to do it, we're just looking at him like he's a dumbass and he's an idiot. But it's just the MO of Dan Campbell. This is, if you think that he couldn't get more psychotic, this is as psychotic as Dan Campbell can get. Fellas, what do you think?
If you were to ask me to guess, like without me even watching the game, to guess which head coach in the NFL, you tell me that this scenario, which head coach in the NFL, final seconds, fourth and inches, you're at the 20-yard line. It's a 39-yard field goal, and they went for it on fourth down. If you would ask me which head coach did this out of all the coaches in the league, This is my first guess. And listen, it worked out this time, as it has a few times in Dan Campbell's career, but it's also come back to bite him in the ass. And everyone likes to praise him for the times that it works out. That's great that it works. But the problem I have with that is that this enables him to do it in the future. This is a regular season game. If you end up losing this game, you still have a great chance at landing the number one seed. In fact, I'm pretty sure you still have it since you beat the Vikings, who are hot on your heels. You'd still have it. You'd still have the division. But if you do this, let's say, in the conference championship against the Eagles, a matchup that we've been hoping would happen for the past few weeks now. Let's say that happens then. I don't know if you're getting out on the other end, because you did it last year on multiple occasions, and with the amount of times that they went for it on fourth down and didn't go for the field goal, if they just took the field goal on every single one of those, they would have won the game and they'd probably be in the Super Bowl. So the fact that he hasn't learned, and you're getting these issues here in games where it ends up actually working out, this enables you to do it more. And Campbell, I love his aggressiveness. I'm not saying I hate it. I just think he needs to tone it down a little bit, because it is going to come back and bite him. You're going to face better teams than the Packers in the postseason when you get deeper in the playoffs. We know that they're a Super Bowl contender. We know that they're probably going to make a deep run. If they do this in the conference championship against, let's say, the Eagles, let's say they make the Super Bowl, they do it against the Bills or the Chiefs, God forbid, you may screw yourself over at that point, because those teams are better teams than the Packers, and you may not come out on the other end. So they haven't learned. I brought this up a couple weeks ago. Like, I said, we haven't seen it this year because no games have been close. I woke up this morning. I saw the final score. I saw the highlights after I rewatched the game this morning. But I saw the final score. I'm thinking, wow, they won a close game where Dan Campbell didn't do anything stupid. And then I opened Twitter, and trending was Dan Campbell, because he went for it on fourth and inches on what would have been a 39-yard field goal so that he could hit a 35-yard field goal as time expired. I'm like, oh, okay. So he hasn't learned, and this, while it works sometimes, it can be looked at as a weakness, and we still need to look at that for this. Clearly, this is still a problem for this Lions team going forward.
4 for 5 on fourth down for the Lions last night, by the way. CJ, your take.
I'm sorry. The fact that Dan Campbell just refuses to learn should terrify you as a Lions fan. We keep saying, oh, what if it comes back to bite them in the ass? Well, here's a take. It did. It already did. Remember the NFC Championship game? Look, all it takes in a football game is one play to completely shift the momentum. And that exactly happened against the Niners last year. And that play completely flipped momentum on its head, and the Lions completely sputtered out. Can I see that happening again? Yeah, I can. It already happened once, and he shows no signs of stopping. And look, if you do make a deep run and you do beat Philly with that, or you beat the Bills or the Chiefs or the Ravens or whoever like that, then good for you. All right. Like good for you. More power to you. But then you kind of become one dimensional. When you're this aggressive, you can be dimensional. One dimensional, because teams are going to know, like, oh, okay, he's going to go for on fourth down. See, if I'm a head coach and I have the Lions on my schedule, I'm just going to be like, all right, all week we're putting extra special attention to fourth down drills, because you know Campbell is a psychotic SOB, more akin to Randy Marsh from South Park when he put his balls in a wheelbarrow. And, yeah, and you're just gonna be like, all right, more fourth down drills, more short yardage situations, like, because you know he's just gonna do it. I mean, how long until teams start planning for it? Because it didn't look like the Packers planned for it, and you could tell because Jared Goff fell down and they still got it. And look, I will be fair. We got to look beyond the game. The Packers could have won this game. At one point, I mean, the Lions were literally up by two scores, and then the Packers came back, took the lead, and the Lions eventually, you know, came back and put them away. And, you know, you can call me a box score watcher, but I'm sorry. Team stats don't lie. One of the big reasons the Packers lost this game, because we always like to talk about Dan Campbell and his shenanigans, but I feel like that's letting Green Bay off the hook. The Packers got absolutely dominated as far as time of possession. 23 minutes and 54 seconds for the Packers, 36 minutes and 6 seconds for the Lions. Now, there is one thing I will say about Dan Campbell's coaching and Jared Goff as a quarterback. For as aggressive as the Lions can be, we kind of underestimate their ability to just sit on the ball, right? They can sit on the ball, they can drain clock, and obviously if you keep going from a fourth down, it helps. But the Packers got absolutely, like I said, dominated in time of possession. And you look at like the total yards gained, Detroit outgained them by almost 100. And we also need to talk about Jordan Love. Look at him. This man did absolutely nothing. And look, we're familiar with how Jordan Love plays, right? Everybody on the show, us three, at least once has likened him to Brett Favre. Where was that? He was so neutered. If the Lions were hyper-aggressive, then the Packers were just on the opposite end. Completely neutered. No feistiness. No spunk. Just dinks and dunks. Jordan Love only attempted 20 passes. For what it's worth, Jared Goff had more completions than Jordan Love did attempts. You know, 12 for 20, 206 yards, a touchdown. And look, I know Josh Jacobs is having a good game, but hey, Adam always mentioned, you know, like, hey, you know, when you're playing from behind, you know, maybe running the ball's not exactly the best idea. But Josh Jacobs, 18 carries, 66 yards, 3 touchdowns. That does worry me for the Lions. Because look, I'm not going to protect. I'm not going to. You can't really blame Detroit. All right. I'm not going to attack them too hard on this. Because how many people, was it like 14 or 15 defensive players for the Lions are now on IR? 13. Many of it. Huh? 13. 14? 13?
13.
Okay. 13. Do the math. That's more than an entire starting 11. Obviously, it's not all their starters, but they have had an alarming amount of people go down, especially up front. The front seven, you know, they've been brutalized. And Josh Jacobs was able to run all over them. And look, if Jordan Love plays a little more aggression, maybe the Packers do win. But either way, the Lions have clinched a playoff berth. There's no doubt whatsoever about that. It's just so concerning for the Lions to see Josh Jacobs. I mean, the aggressiveness aside, but I can't be the only one who sees Josh Jacobs run all over him, you know, get 3 touchdowns on their head and be like, oh yeah, no, they might. I mean, this really might be what comes back to bite him. Forget aggressiveness, just the injuries. What's going to happen, God forbid, in the playoffs, you up against Saquon? And I'll leave you with that. All in all, for the Lions, though, you did, you know, you kept the ball. You're able to sit on it for a bit. This questionable decision making aside, you know, you did win for the Packers. I don't know. I mean, sure, Jordan Love's the guy, but I'm just so uninspired.
Yeah, I mean, the Lions are a supremely talented team. So this is, I mean, Campbell's aggressiveness only scares me in tight games. Right. It's if you're questioning on whether or not on good days that they're going to be able to hang 50 on a team, then they're still going to be able to blow out teams. But it in games where the other team shows up and it's crunch time and you're leading a drive into field goal range and a field goal wins it and you're deep in field goal range, why are you going for it on fourth down? It's an extremely risky situation that you just don't need to take. 39 yards is perfectly fine. And, well, 4 yards makes it easier. What difference does that make? That's less than 40 yards. It's a problem if you can't make a 39-yard field goal. So that it we're almost splitting hairs at this point when we talk about his Dan Campbell's aggressiveness. It's still a problem when you take this later into seasons where you're facing Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts. Those teams aren't going to just let you those teams aren't just going to turtle and let you hang 40 on them. Like they're going to make it close, and mistakes like that he made in the NFC Championship last year, those end up becoming they hurt you pretty bad. So that's all I'm worried about.
I was looking at the play-by-play just to give myself a rough idea, because I don't know, the CJ's one-dimensional comment doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, what makes it one-dimensional that he's going for it on fourth down? What makes it? Are you saying it's if
because
they're in
he routinely throws cautious? He routinely throws caution into the wind. It's going. I mean, when you're this aggressive, it's going to get to a point where your opponents are going to expect that. At this point, we would have been more shocked if we just kicked the field goal.
Then they got to stop it.
Perhaps one dimensional is a poor choice of words. It's just becoming trite. People are going to expect it.
Because when I hear one dimensional, I hear it in more of a play calling standpoint. And
okay,
so,
I didn't mean that. I meant it was a poor choice of words. I just meant that it's becoming predictable.
Okay, and that's fine. At that point, it's on the defense for making the stop. The Packers had five chances of stopping them on fourth down, and they only did it one time. And lo and behold, Dan Campbell went for it on fourth down from his own 31, and the Packers ended up scoring off of the fourth down stop. Other than that, they didn't stop them the other four times. So that's really on the defense to make a stop at that point. Okay. And I wanted to look back at some of these plays, some of these drives of when they went for it on fourth down as well, just to see what we're looking at here. Obviously, I just mentioned they went for it on fourth and one from their own 35, 31. And they lost a yard, turned into a Green Bay touchdown. Earlier in the game, towards the end of the first half, fourth down and two, or fourth and goal from the 2 yard line. Jared Goff, touchdown pass. It's fourth and goal. Later on in the game, fourth and goal from the Green Bay 3, touchdown pass. Already went over that. Fourth down, fourth and one, end of game from the Green Bay 21. And that ended up sealing the deal. And there was another fourth down that was in here that I know that I'm missing. I just can't fucking find it. There was another fourth down conversion that they had right before in the third quarter when they went to go up 24-21 when they went up 24-21, and it was fourth and one from the Detroit 49. And when CJ made the one-dimensional comment, now knowing that it was a poor choice of words, I wanted to see what they're calling on third down, what the down and distance is. The down and distance on these third downs, like when you expect a team to go for it on fourth down or you're in four down territory, a lot of teams tend to pass it on third and short because they know that they're going to probably run it on fourth and short. And a lot of these third down plays, they're third and intermediate, third and eight, third and five, third and nine, and they're throwing it just short of the line to gain and then running it on that fourth down. So, I mean, obviously, we just proved that CJ didn't mean what he just said, so I don't really need to go too much further with it. But I feel like it just depends on when you're doing it. I don't think it's bad that Dan Campbell is going for it on fourth and goal inside the five or fourth and short from the 25 or whatever. In fact, I actually like the idea of going for it on fourth down from the Packers 25 or whatever the hell the ball was, because I don't want to take the chance of giving the ball back to Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur. granted, the defense was doing a solid enough job, but they had also given up 31 points. I don't want to take a risk of sending this game to overtime. I know that my defense has 13 players on IR. I don't want to go to overtime and risk more injury. I don't want my defense back out on the field. I guess that's the way I see it. And yeah, you guys bring up the NFC Championship game. And granted, one of the fourth down calls that didn't work was a Jameson Williams drop pass. That would have been a first down. Granted, that's just one fourth down that we're that I'm picking out of a cornfield. But I think that half of it is true, and or half of it is definitely Dan Campbell needs to chill out. But half of it is like, I like where he's calling the fourth down or going for it on fourth down.
I think he's doing it too often. There's a lot of easy ones, but the more easy ones you go for, the more likely that you're going to fail on a bunch of them. And you're also going to get to a point in the
five on fourth down. Then, I mean, shit, like, do it more often.
You have a Thursday night football game, short rest against the Packers defense that isn't all that good. And on top of that, this is a regular season game. Defenses tighten up when you get to into the postseason. It worked out for them for the most part last year, and it's worked out so far this year for the most part. But you're going to get to a point where defenses, they tighten up. The teams that you face get better. And like, do you expect to be able to pull this off against Kansas City in that front seven? I don't know if you'll be able to do that at that magnitude. And I don't know if Jared Goff is for the season that Jared Goff has had this year. He's been very good. But for the season that he has had, we know what Jared Goff is. We know he's not an elite quarterback. He's more of a B to B plus level type of quarterback. Do you think he'll be able to make those kinds of plays in high pressure situations in the most important game of the year? I'm not quite so sure.
Then those two playoff wins from last year don't not matter? Those were arguably the two biggest games in Detroit history.
Yeah, it matters. I'm just saying he hasn't won the last one. My expectation is not divisional round, not wild card round. My expectation is NFC Championship or Super Bowl. In fact, I picked them to win the Super Bowl this year. So if they're making rash decisions like this right now, where it gets overly risky to the point where this could cost you later on in the season, then that's a little worrisome for me. I'm not saying aggression isn't good. It's good. I just think he overdoes it. And with the amount of times that he could have just taken the points in the NFC Championship game, they would have won the game. At least they would have been highly likely to.
Fair enough. I mean, I don't know. If I had the offense that the Lions have, then I'd probably be doing almost as much of the aggressiveness as Dan Campbell is, to be honest. That's how good the Lions offense is.
I'd be aggressive too. I agree with you. I'd be aggressive too. I think he overdoes it, and they're going to blow out a lot of teams because they're just that talented, but you're going to face a team at some point that's going to limit you in scoring. That's going to match you in how many points that they score. So at that point, every decision matters, and it worked out for them this time, but we've seen times where it didn't. So it's something I'm a little concerned about.
I guess we'll see what happens in how many weeks do we have left? Or doesn't really matter. We'll see in a month once playoff time comes around. But CJ, want to add anything else before we take a short break?
I don't know. Just I was turning over in my head what you said about Jared Goff or what Adam said about Jared Goff about, you know, when the lights shine brightest, will he be able to do it? And you said, oh, well, were those two playoff games last year not enough for you? You know, granted, this was years ago, but I can think of a different game Jared Goff was in with arguably a better offense around him where the lights were that much brighter and he didn't do it.
That's a Jared Goff in his third season. This is Jared Goff in his...
Okay. Yeah, third season with a better team and a better coach.
I'm just saying Jared Goff is a much different quarterback than what he was in 2018.
That's actually a fair. I like to use Super Bowl 53 as an argument for what separates good quarterbacks from great ones. The one on the opposite sideline also had a bad game, but he made the throws he needed to make when he absolutely had to. Box score watchers are going to say that was a terrible game, and they'd be right overall. But he helped them to win the game, which is something that won't show in the box score. But if you look at the actual game, you will see that he made a beautiful throw, arguably the best of his entire Super Bowl career, in triple coverage, dropped it right into Rob Gronkowski's arms to make the catch right before the goal line. Jared Goff never made plays like that.
And he still continues to not do it.
And Sean McVay also got outcoached like a motherfucker by Bill Belichick.
And he's still a better head coach than Dan Campbell.
We could agree on that.
When Goff has literally not risen up to the occasion with a better coach and a better roster. And sure, anyone can point out that it's his third year, but like, I mean, I feel like the ceiling hasn't exactly moved. Maybe it got a little better, just that the floor got higher. That's just my point.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think that 2024 Goff is a lot different than 2018 Goff, but like I said, time will tell in a month, see what's going to happen. All right, time to move away from the Lions. Still got a pretty good slate coming up here on week 14. When we come back, we're going to get into our Ruski game of the week. This is the Fumble Ruski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
This is the Fumble Ruski podcast. I'm Chris Kostich, Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros. It's time for the Ruski game of the week, the Chargers versus the Chiefs. Goodness. You know, on paper, it really doesn't seem like that good of a game besides the records and the head coaches. Great head coach matchup, great quarterback matchup. Justin Herbert also is one of 3 quarterbacks to not throw an interception in 10 straight weeks. 2010 Tom Brady. And I may give you guys $5 if you can guess who the other quarterback is.
Can I get a season or no?
I think it was 2018. I'm already blanking on the season. Same division, though.
Oh, wait, who was the other one?
Same division as Herbert.
Either Patrick Mahomes or Derek Carr.
Carr.
Yeah, I think.
I was going to say Mahomes, and then I was... Well, I did say.
No, it would have to be Carr.
Yeah. Yeah. Derek Carr, just such a weird quarterback.
He was never the same after that injury, too. Oh, well.
Feel bad. Big storyline, though. Ladd McConkey. He's out. But second time around for these two teams where the Chiefs won. And oh, my goodness. It's the Chiefs just keep finding horseshit ways to win, and I'm sick of it. They should have lost to the Raiders last week, and the Chargers are smelling blood. They are smelling blood. They know they should have beat the Chiefs last time around, and I think they're going to come in with a different type of energy for this game. Mahomes still can't get it figured out with his receivers. Noah Gray is his freaking top receiver. Give me the Chargers. Jim Harbaugh, this is the lunch pail game. Jim Harbaugh got all of his boys lunch pails. They're going to work. It's going to be a down and gritty game. Give me Los Angeles.
This is a tough one. But weighing out the way the way that the Chiefs have looked so far this season, they've gotten better. So I think this is going to be an overall competitive game. And the Chargers have been a very steady football team. Dare I say, probably the most stable team in their division, even with the Chiefs. Just with their quarterback is being kept on his feet by his offensive line. That's a big difference from years past with Justin Herbert. Their coaching has been uncharacteristically among the best in the league this year. We all know why, because they brought in Jim Harbaugh, which is the exact reason they did it, because they needed that coaching to get better. And we're clearly seeing now why I value targets. Why I value offensive line and coaching over targets. Skill position players are great. We love our Jamar Chases. We love our Justin Jeffersons of the world. In Justin Herbert's case, it would be Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, who we used to have. Those guys are gone, and now you have a good offensive line and a good coach, but the team production is better because Herbert's on his feet. He knows where to throw. And for that, I'm picking the Chargers. It's not to say that the Chiefs aren't overall probably still a better team just because Patrick Mahomes is that great of a quarterback, but that doesn't mean that the Chiefs are going to finish with one loss on the season. I think you're going to lose a few more as this season goes on. This is probably more one of the shakier years that Patrick Mahomes has played in, and this Chiefs team as a whole ever since 2018. So yeah, give me the Chargers. And just a heads up as well, Ladd McConkey is still questionable. Not yet ruled out. He was limited in practice on Thursday. We're not sure of his status so far.
I'm sorry for the misinformation. I just wanted to preface that there is a good chance that McConkey probably won't play.
You know what's also questionable is the Patriots' decision to pass on him to draft Jalen Polk, but that'll be
yes.
Trading back too, don't forget that.
Yeah.
I said, we like this guy, Polk. Let's just move back and then
take him. Love Robert Kraft.
No. So I got to go with Kansas City. I'm going to be honest. Because the Bills show there's only one way to beat KC. You got to go out, punch them in the mouth early, and keep your foot on their neck. That's basically it. You have to get out the gate early. And you're going to need two scores in the fourth quarter. Because let me tell you something. Either way, whether the Chiefs are up or you're up, if it's the fourth quarter and it's a one-score game, Kansas City is going to win. They are undefeated in one-score games thus far. And surely, and we all know why. Look, see, here's the thing. When you stop them on fourth down, tough luck, the flag's coming out. Right? When you get the game-winning touchdown, sorry, the flag's coming out. Like, this is something that you got to accept. You have to be up, and this is something that we've said before. You can never afford to leave the game in the hands of the officials. You have to be up by multiple scores in the fourth quarter, and even with McConkey, and look, if you do have him, he's going to be banged up. So at best, he's going to be like a decoy used to draw coverage. But even still, even if he's healthy, you don't have the explosiveness on offense to put points up on the Chiefs. Like if you still had, even if you still had old man Keenan Allen, or heck, even Mike Williams, I'd probably be leaning toward the Chargers. It's just, I don't know. I feel like it's going to be another close game, but the Chiefs in the fourth quarter, they get bailed out. And they get bailed out repeatedly. And like I said, if it's a one-score game, they're going to win. You're going to need to be up by at least two, and I don't see it happening for the Chargers. And I know it's stupid reasoning, but still, if McConkey doesn't play, then it's almost certain for Kansas City.
Yeah, no J.K. Dobbins either, but I don't know. There's just a certain will that I feel like the Chargers need to have and will have, especially if they think they're going to win a playoff game, maybe two. I feel like if they're going to have some sort of role or momentum going into the playoffs, I know that we still have a number of weeks till the playoff, a month till playoffs. But if you want the confidence to make a deep run, this is the game that you have to win to get that going for you.
And I think they're going to do it. And if you do get out and come out of this game with a win, then their schedule gets a hell of a lot easier. You got the Buccaneers right after that. The Broncos, that'll be a tough game and a potential game of the week for that week of that slate of games for us. You have the Patriots and then the Raiders. So if you win this one, then there's a good chance that you finish 12-5, which is a great year by Chargers standards. I mean, last year you had the number 5 overall pick. And now we're sitting here and we're calling this team a 12-5 team. That's incredible.
I'd say 12-5, maybe 11-6, because you never know. Tampa Bay is getting healthy again, so never know what's going to happen with that. Especially with the Chiefs schedule coming up too. I would say Chiefs schedule is a bit tougher than what the Chargers are. So there's even a chance that the Chargers compete for the division at that point.
Yeah, it's a small chance, but it's small. There's a legitimate chance. Don't get me wrong. It's just the Chiefs. Look, I know it's cheesy to say, when you make the game-winning stop on fourth down and you get the game-winning touchdown, the flag's coming out. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
Am I wrong? You cannot lose a game. It has to be a two-score game because there are forces beyond your control, because you're not just playing Kansas City. You're playing a narrative. They make money. Oh, Christ, I can't remember.
Subsequently, this is in agreement, CJ, in disagreement. Okay. The sigh of relief. Subsequently, in the same way that the Chargers have an easy schedule if they take this game, the Chiefs have a pretty tough one. So, yes, they have the Browns right after. That's probably a victory, but you never know. Any given Sunday. But you have the Texans after that. You have the Steelers after that. And you have the Broncos who just took you all the way to the end of the game. It took them to a
blocked field goal.
A missed chip shot field goal where it's like, how the hell did that happen? So, I mean, I didn't have the Chargers in play for this division, and I wouldn't put money on them taking it. But the path is there. The Chiefs have a tough remaining schedule. The Chargers have it a little bit easier after this game. So if they win this one,
I mean, it's possible. Yeah. However, I will say one thing for Kansas City. I fully expect the Chargers to make them sweat. And honestly, McConkey or not, if the Chargers even had Dobbins, I'd probably be leaning towards them. It's just, if McConkey's out, then you just got dealt two blows that it's just going to make it that much tougher. Because let's not act like Kansas City's a bad team. No. They're a good system. You know, Reed is a good coach. He's been able to elevate Mahomes through Mahomes' let's be real, not very good play. And Steve Spagnuolo, though his reputation as a defensive mastermind can, be a little overplayed because he's never been more than a defensive coordinator. I mean, we saw how he was as a coach. He wasn't very good. But they're still – the Chiefs are a good role-playing team, and that's going to be my thing. If you're able to, like I said, come out, punch them in the mouth early, just keep your foot on the gas, it should be fine. Optimal word is should.
Yeah. We're going to move on, take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into the rest of the week 14 slate. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Pirate 18 Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. Chris Kostich, CJ Medeiros, Adam Wright. Move on to the rest of week 14. First, the 1 p.m. games. Here's a little nugget for you guys. Week 13, 12 of the 16 games played last week were one-score games. Woo-wee. Woo-wee. Probably could have been 13 if James didn't throw that last pick six. But yeah, the slate for this week isn't great, but it also is one of those weeks where a not so great slate might lead to a lot of chaos. And with that, we start with the Jaguars and the Titans. Talk about chaos. Talk about chaos. Mac Jones, the starter for Jacksonville the rest of the season. Trevor Lawrence, he was going to be out for a couple weeks because of his concussion, but just recently announced earlier this week that he's going to be out for the season due to AC joint surgery. If you're wondering what an AC joint is, Jimmy Garoppolo had it when he was on the Pats. So in your shoulder area. Kind of affects the way that you throw the ball. So, Jaguars and Titans. Titans are favored. We're in Nashville. Titans got the spread at 3.5. I don't even know where to go with this at all. Feel like my gut is kind of tingling towards Jacksonville, though. Part of me is thinking, well, Mac Jones is going up against a pretty solid Titans defense. But Mac Jones is also coming off of some pretty good momentum and almost coming back and beating the Texans last week. Let's ride on the momentum here. Give me Jacksonville. Why not? Just why not? AFC South game, fuck it. Who knows? It's not like this game fucking matters anyways. Except for the draft.
It matters in draft purposes. And you guys, if you guys follow our podcast page on Instagram, then you see why every Jaguars game matters for the Patriots and for anybody else in the top five of this draft who wants Travis Hunter. The Titans need to win some games. If you're a fan of the team that isn't the Jaguars, that needs a wide receiver or a tackle. And I strongly believe that they're going to take Travis Hunter if the Jaguars get that pick. However, I don't think the Jaguars are winning this game, although their schedule is very easy coming up. Jaguars aren't winning this game. I think they lose this one. The Titan, we look at momentum for the Jaguars. Let's look at some for the Titans. And I'll give a tiny bit, just a tad bit of credit where it's due. Will Levis has played a little better since he's come back from injury. He's played much better. Yeah. Whether it's just a flash in the pan or whatever is one thing, but the momentum is also on the Titans' side. And Mac Jones is also not a very good quarterback. So you look at two not very good quarterbacks, two of them both having some good momentum. Will Levis, we haven't seen much of, but since the start of his career, since he's only in year two, and he's gotten a little better. He has good targets. I think the Titans come out with this victory. I'm not saying it's in a good way, but I still think they win the suck fest. So give me the Titans.
Regardless of who we're picking to win, I think we can all agree nobody's winning in the good way. Now, this is going to be an ugly game. A suck fest, as Adam just truthfully put it.
You think I'm going to fucking watch this game? I'm not even going to fucking watch this game.
Well, we can't because we're probably not even getting it in New England.
I don't even care. Plus, I wouldn't watch it for the life of me anyways.
I don't know.
Sorry, CJ. For cutting
the only way I would even consider this is if it just happens to assault my eyes during red zone, but I can deal with that. It's for fantasy purposes. Y'all know the lore. But I got to go with Jacksonville because I think there's a hidden element to this that a lot of people forget about. And that's the mental aspect. You saw what happened. That monster, Azeez Al-Shaair, literally woke up and said, the spirit of Vontaze Burfict is telling me to kill Trevor Lawrence. And, yeah. So that's just what he tried to do. And if you're the Jags, you're angry. Sure, you got the worst record in the league. Sure, you're out of the playoffs. But I think there's a lot of anger with Jacksonville. You know, they're out for blood. They're out to, in the words of Dan Campbell, bite some kneecaps. And in a divisional game, they found the right team to wail against in the Titans. Because sure, Will Levis has been playing a little better, but see, I thought once they upset Houston, oh, hey, you know, maybe this is going to be a thing. Nope, nope, just kidding. The Commanders absolutely violated them. And that's really all it need be. Just the Titans are just so underwhelming. At least Mac Jones can be a game manager. Will Levis is just kind of a, I'm going to chuck it deep and see what happens.
Will Levis, since returning from injury, 7 touchdowns to 2 interceptions, and has been sacked 7, 12, 22 times in 4 games. That's pretty terrible. I just wanted to throw that stat out there for you guys, but not like it really matters, to be honest. But
well, I mean, with the amount that they've invested on that offensive line.
True.
Jets Dolphins in Miami. Give me the Dolphins. I don't know. This is a typical Dolphins shit on a sub 500 team game. They're going to run all over the Jets. They're going to throw all over the Jets. I mean, will the Jets offense might look like that they actually aren't going to die tomorrow? Sure. Maybe. Miami doesn't have a great defense, but I think that Miami's offense is going to cook a little bit more against a terrible Jets defense. Also, injury update for the Jets as well. And of course, I pull the classic. I should have had this pulled up prior to me bringing it up. Significant Jets news for Sunday. Breece Hall and Sauce Gardner will both be listed as doubtful. In addition, CJ Mosley placed on IR, ending his season. Neck injury. Honestly, it's not like he really did anything anyways. No one on that defense has really done anything.
The Jets are winning this game. Kidding. Give me the Dolphins. This isn't even, it's not even worth the time of day for me to even explain. Tua's healthy. Offense is going to be high flying. Jets are the Jets. That's it. I've said what I've said. I've spoken.
All right. I mean, it's got to be the Dolphins, right? Yeah, that's literally what it is. The Jets are just a team that I feel like has given up. You know, I say this every week about a number of teams. That's true. The wheels are coming off. Aaron Rodgers' future is in doubt. Joe Douglas is gone. Your head coach Sala's been gone. Like, they're just trying to make the games not hurt until they can limp their way into the offseason and lick their wounds. And on top of that, it's in Miami. And Miami, you know, they just got their tail fins handed to them by the Packers. So, you know, they're just going to be looking at just an easy team they can just wallop. So, give me Miami.
If you finish that take with the Jets are just a team.
Yeah, they are just a team. They are certainly a team.
They may not even be that at this point. I mean,
they're a JUCO team, but still a team.
They're one of the teams of all time.
Oh, certainly.
Like, this season for the Jets has just been, I think this has probably been the most heartbreaking for Jets fans because of how hopeful it was.
Yeah. I don't know who said it before. But somebody said, I think it was one of us who said it. It was the Jets with Aaron Rodgers are everything that people thought Tom Brady, that Tom Brady with the Buccaneers was supposed to be. And I couldn't think of a better summary for that.
Yeah.
Astute observation, man.
Somehow Tom Brady just kicked it into another gear in his mid-40s. But this feels like it's normal for a 40-year-old quarterback. What we see from Aaron Rodgers is what you're supposed to see from a 40-year-old quarterback, which just makes what Tom Brady did look that much better. And even Drew Brees, he played in his 40s. He didn't look that good, but he looked better than Rodgers does. So credit to them for being able to last as long as they did.
I think after I made that, I said that. I also said that Brady kind of ruins the quarterback game for everybody else, because now you're expected to play, and not just Brady, of course, like obviously Favre is going to have something to do with it. Breeze is going to have something to do with it. Peyton Manning a little bit. And now Aaron Rodgers, of course. They kind of ruined it for other quarterbacks, because now it seems like you're expected to play into your early 40s at this rate. Whereas, like, you have Max Kellerman in 2014 and 2015 saying that Brady was going to fall off a cliff, which, statistically speaking, he wasn't wrong. He wasn't wrong, but like,
I thought that was a good take, honestly. Like, that's usually what happens. It's not his fault. Yeah. How is he supposed to know Brady was a cyborg? But like, I'll add another narrative to what you said, Chris, is that a lot of we've seen in recent years some success of older quarterbacks going to new teams and having success. Have you noticed that a lot of teams have been doing that now, but it hasn't been working like it usually does? Russell Wilson got traded to the Broncos. He was terrible. Aaron Rodgers with the Jets now. It's happening more often, and it's not working in the way that we thought it would. Matt Ryan went to the Colts to a lesser extent. But like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, all quarterbacks who went to new teams late in their careers found newfound success right away. But we're now seeing that those quarterbacks are just that special. They were able to do it. They made it look easy.
Speaking of Colts, Philip Rivers took the Colts to the playoffs in his 1 year.
Kind of, yeah. That
he was so mid, though. That was more of a team.
Yeah, I know, but still.
It's good enough, yeah.
Yeah. Falcon, speaking of old-ass quarterbacks going to a new team, the Vikings and the Falcons.
Oh, that's going to be a game.
Kirk Cousins coming off of a 4-interception game. The wheels are falling off in Atlanta. I know that we were saying, oh, this Falcons team, it's going to be between them and Tampa Bay. It still is, but I'm sorry, Atlanta's not winning the NFC South. They're just not.
Worse and worse.
You just don't know what the hell you're expecting. I mean, they still have fantastic players, but I mean, it's gotten to the point where now the play of Kirk Cousins has ultimately completely affected how Atlanta is playing this year. Kirk Cousins has not thrown a touchdown pass in his last three games. Guess how many interceptions he's thrown in the last three games?
Six.
Six interceptions, no touchdowns. What the fuck? What the fuck? That's crazy.
That's what not top 10 quarterbacks do, Chris.
Hey, man, he was top 10 in Minnesota. I don't give a fuck. He was top 10, but
where he is now?
How about this? He was top 10, but number 10.
He's
definitely not a top 10 quarterback right now. That's for certain, unfortunately. I mean, I love Kirk Cousins, but Jesus Christ, he's played like a complete donkey.
So who's winning?
Vikings.
I'm going to say Vikings, but I'm going to use my stage to say start Michael Penix. Bench Kirk Cousins. Your stupidity was strangely fortunate, because you brought in two quarterbacks. One late in his career. Here's another one we talked about for the last matchup. So many quarterbacks were moving teams, changing teams late in their careers. They expect success like Brady and Manning did. And we're getting Kirk Cousins, which, I mean, that's like preferring the taste of dog shit over filet mignon, but that's another thing. Start Michael Penix. That kid actually looked pretty good in preseason. He's a kid who had a lot of hype. There's a reason he went number 8 overall in this draft, rather 7th, excuse me. But start Michael Penix. You're in the playoff hunt and you have good targets around you, a good offensive line. Literally, like, everyone's saying, well, they're in the playoff hunt. You don't want to mess it up. The guys who's starting right now is messing it up. Michael Penix might actually fix it. CJ, I brought this up on Tuesday to you. Mm-hmm. The year was 2018. The Baltimore Ravens started the season with Joe Flacco and they benched Lamar Jackson. Who did they bench later in that season that saved their season? Joe Flacco. Who started? Lamar Jackson. They didn't go anywhere, but it was good development. It was good experience for Lamar Jackson to get his feet wet for an eventual unanimous MVP in 2019.
Ended up going to the playoffs that year.
That's what I'm saying. It saved their season.
Honestly, if you are the Falcons, really think critically about this, okay? What do you have to lose by putting in Penix? See, here's the thing. I would actually argue it's worse for them to make the playoffs. You know why? Worst draft pick. And we remember when the NFC South was called the Tank Division? That's why, because somebody in that god-awful dumpster fire division, I want to say, what was that, like 2019, 2018, something like that? They, like, somebody who was either mid or worse was going to have to make the playoffs. And if you're the Falcons, why do you want that? Like, to what? To prove, like, oh, I'm the man. I'm going to talk my crap. And in the words of Chris, let my nuts drip. But why would you do that? I mean, just start Penix. If you make it, great. But it's better to make it with him than Kirk Cousins, where you already know what you have and it's already not working. So that being said, give me the Vikings. Because the Falcons are just an enigma of a team. They went all in this offseason. You know what they did? They put it all on red at the table. They spun and it came up black. No money for you. Trying to decipher this Vikings team is like giving me a piece of paper written in Russian, say, decipher this. I look at you and say, what the hell? I don't understand Atlanta. Just the Vikings, all you have to do is just stand there, throw the ball to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, and the winning should come easy.
I'm not thinking of draft positioning when I'm talking about the Atlanta Falcons. They have so much talent on offense.
I know you're not.
They have all the talent they need on defense. The only thing that, besides quarterback, that is a little suspect, I would say, is coaching. Coaching seems off, but when you're looking at starting Michael Penix, you also have to think about a winning culture. With the Patriots, I was against starting Drake May because there was literally nothing they could do to restore a winning culture this season. All they would do is lose more games, and you're just putting Drake May at risk. I already knew what they had in him. I did not need to see that more. But when it comes to the Falcons and Michael Penix, this team is somehow still in playoff contention. You have a lot of talent around you. There's nothing that extra draft spot is going to do to help you. But when you weigh it out, making the playoffs this year and establishing some sort of a winning culture with Michael Penix is a good stepping stone to next season, where they could be a lot better.
I also think Minnesota is going to blitz the living fuck out of Kirk Cousins. True. That's just me. Speaking of NFC South stinkers, Saints Giants. Good God.
Gonna be a game.
This is gonna be one of the games of all time. I kind of like the Saints. I kind of like the Giants. Not really. I like the Saints a little bit more. The only thing I can really think of is maybe the Giants are going to sack Derek Carr maybe 5 times. Maybe Alvin Kamara has himself a game. I don't know. There's not really much to look forward to in this game, much like the Jacksonville-Tennessee game. But give me New Orleans. Maybe Kamara gets 2 tutties.
Give me the Giants, but not in a good way. It's like, don't think I'm like, oh, Giants, they're doing real. They're on the up and up. The Saints are just as bad. And listen, the reason I'm picking the Giants is because I like Drew Lock. I think that he's probably the best quarterback in that room for the Giants. And sitting here as a Patriots fan, again, I said for last slate of matchups, I said I wanted Drake May benched this season. I did not want Jacoby Brissett. The quarterback I actually wanted was Drew Locke. I thought he's a decent quarterback who, in the right situation, could win you a few games and you become an entertaining product, holds you over until next season when Drake May's ready to start and you have a better roster for him. And I think when you have him and you have Malik Nabers, I kind of like that combination. So I think the Giants pull the upset again, not in a good way, but give me the Giants.
The only thing to look forward to about the Giants Saints game is that eventually it will be over. By the time 4 o'clock rolls around, the game will be over. Unless, of course, knowing those goober teams, it's probably going to go to overtime because the football gods want us to suffer. That being said, I have to go with the Saints. Because I don't know if you saw this for the Giants, a certain Dexter Lawrence is done for the year. He was your defense. He was literally your defense.
You got Kayvon Thibodeau and Brian Burns, though.
Kayvon Thibodeau, who has done jack and crap the entire year.
Because he's been hurt. He just came back.
And he wasn't doing literally anything before that. Even
the beginning of the season, you can't do anything if the season didn't start. We're not arguing about this. Keep going.
We're arguing about the goddamn Giants. We're arguing about the goddamn Giants. Smart enough.
Kayvon Thibodeau's my man, dude. I think they have a good front seven, but when they're healthy.
Even like their other good players have been horrifically underperforming. But that is neither here nor there. Chris is right. We should not argue about the Giants. I just think the Saints are a better team, you know, with Kamara and the gang and, I don't know, like Olave, I guess. I don't know. Throw a touchdown to Juwan Johnson. Maybe that'll make it better. Whether you put in Tommy DeVito, who's hurt, or Drew Locke, I just think the Giants are done. Dable's done. That's a team that's checked out. And it sucks because I don't think Dable deserved it. I think Joe Shane is the one that should be flung into the East River via trebuchet, not Dable. But we don't always get what we want, do we, kids? So, yeah, give me the Saints.
Isn't Taysom Hill also out for the season?
Oh, yeah, no. Taysom Hill's done. I know because I had him and Christian McCaffrey on the same team.
All right, moving on to the next game. This is going to be another quick one, or should be a quick one, unless we start going on tangents about fucking shitty-ass D-lines. Philly versus Carolina. Spread is this is the biggest spread of the weekend. Philly by 13.5, going to the Vegas. This is so awful, but I'm gonna go with the Eagles. But I do want to say Bryce Young, boy, has he shown up. What the hell are you looking at, Adam? What the hell are you looking at?
You're saying this is so awful, you really can't tell who's gonna win?
Well, yeah, I know it's gonna be the Eagles, but there's just this lingering in the back of my mind. There's this lingering in the back of my mind of watching how good Bryce Young has been playing to say that Carolina's going to cover the spread. Why do I want to think that? Why do I want to think that, Adam? Why?
Well, we're talking about winners. I mean, covering because the spread. Bryce sure, Young, it could be close.
Since he's come back,
if they cover the spread, close. There's a chance they're going to win.
I don't think they're winning, but there's no chance. The Eagles have been on a roll in the same way that Bryce Young has been playing well. He's playing well so that maybe next year the Carolina Panthers turn it around and Bryce Young is actually playing like a number one overall pick. The Eagles, they have a chance to finally have a running back represent as a league MVP for the first time since 2012. And if Saquon Barkley continues to ball out, he's on pace, according to ESPN, he's on pace for over 2,100 yards and I believe 10 to 15 touchdowns. If he ends up with that number, he's taking it, especially if the Eagles end up as a top two seed. Then why would Josh Allen take it? They're the two seed right now over in the AFC too. So yeah, give me Saquon Barkley if that happens. But I mean, overall, that's a really good team over there. They've turned things around. Nick Sirianni is actually playing like being a decent coach, like he always was before this last season. Good pass catchers. It's a good all-around team. And it's going to continue against a Carolina team with a Bryce Young guy who's, yeah, he's good. He's playing better. But it's more of a precursor to next year when maybe they turn it around.
Yeah, I do want to give Bryce Young his flowers because only a select few people have been talking about it. Since he came back, he has 1,078 yards, 6 touchdowns, 3 picks. That's pretty good. Unfortunately, pretty good and a nice little comeback is not going to beat Philly. Philly's defense is just monstrous. You know, you look at that front seven. You look at the young pups there with Mitchell and DeJean. And I just think Philly outclasses Carolina in every way. Not to mention it's in the link as well. You know, the stadium most known for having like a in-stadium jail. So, yeah, I you don't really have to think about it. Although, much like Chris, I do have a lingering feeling about Carolina that, I don't know, maybe for a quarter or two they make Philly sweat. Maybe for a quarter or two they hang around, but...
Maybe the fourth quarter they make it a game.
Hey, it could be.
We saw with KC.
Exactly. Stranger things have happened, but
these
overall,
white men are dangerous.
It's going to be Philly. Whether they sweat or not, it's still going to be Philly. You know what? Pause just in case.
Did you guys see that parody song about Cooper DeJean to the tune of Billie Jean by Michael Jackson?
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Cooper DeJean is not a safety. He's locking up your receiver or whatever the hell it is.
These white men are dangerous.
He and Reed Blankenship. I love how he and Reed Blankenship literally have the shirt that says the exciting whites. That is, yeah. That is messed up, but so funny at the same time.
Jesus.
Oh, wow.
All right. Moving on to NFC North matchup in Pittsburgh, the Steelers and the Browns. Jameis, may God take him away from these pick sixes that he's throwing. But, like, Jesus Christ, if he could, like, stop throwing picks, he would be, like, a top 10 quarterback in the league. That's how ridiculous it is. Like, that's how good he's throwing the ball. Granted, the last time against Pittsburgh, it was snowing and shit. He didn't have that great of a game. But, if he's at the very least a top 15 quarterback if he stops throwing this many picks. And the stat line from last week as well. So if you take this stat line from last week, 497 yards, 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and 2 pick sixes. He has done that 3 times in his career. Everyone else in NFL history has done it 3 times. Total. Combined. 3 times. That is as much of a Jameis Winston stat as I've ever seen in my life. And I love it. I love it. But however, this is actually going to come to a shock to you guys, but the Browns have not won a regular season game in Pittsburgh. I preface regular season because the Browns did beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh in the playoffs a couple years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
That game was like a fever dream, but, they have not beaten Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh since the Tim Couch Browns of 2003.
Jeez.
So give me the Steelers. They need a revenge game. They're going to come out firing a little bit. Give me the Steelers.
Chris W. Kostich, there's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, "Fool me once, shame on you, but fool me can't be fooled again." That's a quote by George Bush. Fool me once. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they lost to the Cleveland Browns earlier on this season. I don't think it's going to happen again.
No.
That was a game where it felt like it wasn't real. And I know the Steelers have been weird this year. They're a team where we've preached all season long they could win, they could beat anybody, and we wouldn't be surprised. They could also lose to anybody, wouldn't be surprised. Doesn't mean they lose to the same team twice. Don't think it's happening again. This Brown team sucks. Give me the Steelers.
I love Jameis. I really do as a quarterback. Gotta be the funniest guy. Puts up the most interesting stat lines you've ever seen. But I don't think it's going to be enough to beat Pittsburgh. As Chris mentioned, in Pittsburgh, yeah, our buddy W there, you know, he did mention it is in Pittsburgh. So I got to go with the Steelers, you know, and it probably won't be in weird weather, but not that I think that was an excuse to begin with, looking at you, Pickens. But once again, you don't have to think too hard. It's going to be Pittsburgh. I mean, granted the Bengals' defense was terrible, but you saw it hung 40 on the Bengals. So, I mean, I don't know. You are riding some momentum into that game, so do with that what you will.
Yeah. You mentioned weather. It's going to be a lot nicer weather, to say the least, compared to that Thursday night game in Cleveland, where the lake effect took over in the second half, whereas it won't be much lake effect in this game. 48 degrees and mostly sunny. Last game in the 1 o'clock slate, the Raiders and the Bucks. The Bucks are right on the Falcons' heels. They're going to win the NFC South. And look, they're already on the start of a massive run, and they're going to run the rest of the table. They're going to run the table. That's as easy as it is. Maybe they beat the Chargers. You know what? Book it. They're being the Chargers.
Okay.
And they're also going to beat the Raiders this week.
Yeah, Buccaneers are taking this one. They finally got Mike Evans back, and they need that guy to get his yards for 1K for another season.
What's he at right now?
He's at not enough right now.
Hmm.
Off the top of my head. He's in the 500, but it doesn't matter. This is the longevity thing. We got to see him do it. I don't know if he'll do it. He has a chance because he's the only target in that pass catching core right now, at least the only elite one that they have. So by volume, he's going to see a lot of targets in the next few weeks. So he has a shot. And against a Vegas defense, that's very so-so. The Raiders obviously want to win games. You always want to try and win, but it's probably in the back of everyone's minds that if they end up losing, that's probably the best scenario for them because they get that top pick that they want for the quarterback. The Buccaneers want to win games because they're right there in the hunt for the division crown to host a playoff game. I think that combination should say all you need.
I think that Mike Evans will get, he's at 521 right now. He's probably going to get double digit touchdowns, by the way, as well. I think that Mike Evans can get 479 receiving yards in the next month. But anyways, CJ.
Possibly, but it's Tampa. It's not close. The Raiders, I know Adam says they want to win, but I think all of us would like to be multi-billionaires too. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. And the Raiders are just another driftless team that's just slipping and sliding around. Like, you don't know what it's going to do. You're just going to, you know, it's like watching a car race and, you know, one car's on fire and you know, they're just trying to hold it together, just kind of like skid off the pavement. That's the Raiders in a nutshell. They're not really playing for a whole lot either outside of a draft pick. Because like I said, if you look at some of the other bottom teams, the Jags, you know, they're angry. You know, they got a chip on their shoulder after the Aziz Alshaier thing. New England wants to continue to develop Drake May. What do the Raiders exactly have to play for? Antonio Pierce will be gone at the end of this season because the Raiders are going to have to make a business decision. So, but if you're Tampa, there's a very real shot you run the table. And I absolutely believe that Tampa's going to win because they want to pull the rug out from Atlanta and, you know, actually win the division themselves. And I think they will. Give me the Bucks.
Also, big storyline, Brock Bowers, rookie of the year. Fuck all these other quarterbacks. Give Brock Bowers rookie of the year. I don't care. He's about to shower the receiving record. receiving yards and receptions record. Give Brock Bowers offense rookie of the year. I don't care how Daniel's been doing. Brock Bowers has been the most consistent rookie out of every single rookie in this class.
Problem is, I don't think they'll do it. And I don't know. I honestly don't know.
If he's a receiver, maybe, but as a tight end, oh no, the league will not let that happen. It's bad for the
He's fourth in receiving. Like, I know that it's going to be a quarterback. I know it's going to be a quarterback that wins rookie of the year, but he's literally fourth in receiving this year.
Yeah, but it's so you see more often pass catchers having great seasons in their rookie years than quarterbacks, which is why it's more valuable when you see the quarterback. And also the quarterback's the most valuable position on the field. If the quarterback has a good season and makes the playoffs, which you have two of them right now, then they're going to be favored 10 times out of 10.
No, I know. I know. What?
It doesn't make it right. It's like, I know it's my position on the field, but it's like, that's whatever.
That's CJ basically summed up my point. It's not right. You have a tight end that's going to have a record-breaking season. Whatever. That's for the end of the season. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into our three late afternoon games and our Monday night football game. This is the Fumble Rooska Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooska Podcast, powered by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting, Chris Kostich, Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros. 4 o'clock games. First one, Seahawks Cardinals. Talk about needing NFC. The NFC West is the Wild West as Wild West can get. Just mid. And I think the Cardinals are going to get their get back here. They're at home against Seattle. And I have a feeling this is going to be another hammer the under type of game in terms of this. Over under is 44.5. I know we're not a betting podcast, but if I was a betting man, I'm hammering the under again. I feel like this is going to be another weird slugfest where neither offense can get anything going. But I don't know. Give me the Cardinals. It's just meant to be. The Seahawks are not meant to go 8-5. The Cardinals and the Seahawks are meant to both be 7-6 at the same time. You guys, you like that logic, Adam? I like that
perfect one? Perfectly mid, as all things should be. The Cardinals are they've been very up and down this season, and recently they've been down, which leads me to believe that maybe they'll be up this week, and then the Seahawks will go down and then they'll be up, because again, this division has been the, like you say, the Wild West. We don't even know who's going to win this division. It could be any of these teams right now. Every single one of them has a chance, which is insane. And
Adam,
also sucks in the same. What?
Real quick. Seahawks are on a 3-game winning streak.
That's what I said.
Oh, did you? I missed that. I heard you say that the Seahawks are doing pretty well, so they're due to.
Well, yeah, the Seahawks are doing well, but I didn't say 3-game winning streak. I said they're going to be down. I thought you were correcting me from when.
No. I was trying to pad on to what you were saying.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're not good enough to win 4 games in a row. I completely agree with you there. And in some ways that's really good that this is a competitive division, and in all other ways that's bad, because we know none of these teams are winning a Super Bowl and none of them are even in contention. Either way, all four of them are in playoff contention, and this is just the week for the Cardinals to come out with a victory here. They have the tools to win this game. They lost to the Seahawks last time. I think they're going to turn it around and win this one.
Oh, my God. Chris is right. If he were a betting man, which you are, you would hammer the under, and you would have every right to do so. Oh, my God. just the NFC West is just the weird spin-off show of the movie that is the NFC South. You know, that's literally what they are. It's just the NFC South's offshoot, the NFC West. I'm going with Seattle. I think they got all the momentum. You know, they're on that three-game win streak, like you guys mentioned. And the Cardinals are just a team that reeks of illegitimacy. At bare minimum, the Geno Smith Seahawks have been to the playoffs before. So the term act like you've been here, I think, definitely applies. I'm so unenthused with both teams. But for me, I'm not even going to think too hard. It's just you ride the hot hand.
Wait, what was your pick?
Seahawks.
Okay. I just missed it. That's all.
Oh, no. It's fine.
I wasn't going to start shitting on you. I generally like zoned out when you actually said Seahawks.
So good.
Bills Rams. One of the other NFC West teams playing, because you know they're out west. So Bills Rams. That. I'm not going to think too hard on. I don't think anyone should really think too hard on this one, besides the fact that this has the potential to be a shootout just based off of what you have on the Rams offensive side alone and how good Josh Allen has been playing in this rebuilding year for the Bills that has now seen him at a 10-2 record. I will say the Bills, both of their losses, their two losses are on the road. Something to note, but like I said, I'm not thinking too hard on this. Give me the Bills.
Yeah,
I feel like this could potentially be one. This has the potential to be one of the better games of the weekend. I feel like.
Yeah, this could be one of the more underrated matchups of this slate, because the Rams, they just got back all of their star talent a few weeks ago. In their pass catching core, Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua. You have Kyren Williams still. Their defense is very, very suspect, but they still have a very good offense. And the Rams are playing pretty good football. That being said, so are the Bills. And they're playing arguably the best football in the AFC right now. And I think that continues. Give me the Bills. Josh Allen's playing out of his mind.
It's another one where just don't really waste too much mind power trying to decipher it. It should be Buffalo. I mean, last week, the Rams barely beat the Aints of all teams, let alone, you know, actually competing with Buffalo. Once again, NFC West is a joke. Buffalo's riding the hot hand. Even though it's in LA, I don't think that's going to matter too much. The Rams are a team that, even though they've got a good head coach in Sean McVay, they're on the downswing. Only half of your defense is good. You know, you got a great pass rush. Oh, but that defensive backfield is god-awful. And that's pretty much it. I mean, your offense is good. I mean, your line is weird. But, you know, Stafford's getting up there in age. It's just, you know, just try to scrape out a few wins where you can. But overall, I don't see him beating Buffalo. Give me Buffalo.
Here's a cute little trend to throw at you guys as well. In the last five games, win, loss, win, loss, win.
Loss.
Also, barely beat the Seahawks. Next week, lose to Miami. Next week, they barely beat the Patriots. The next week, they get the shit kicked out of them by Philly. Next week, obviously last week, they barely beat the Saints. So this could very much be a shit kicking from Buffalo. Final game in the late afternoon slate, or pretty much the final game we're going to cover on the Sunday slate. Bears and the Niners. I wanted to talk about these two teams in depthly on Tuesday, but I didn't have time to. I had to leave before top three, bottom three, because both teams were on the bottom three. The Niners, I think it's safe to say and I've finally accepted the fact that it is more than likely that the Niners are not making the playoffs this year. It's more than likely. I would say that any of the other three teams in the NFC West is going to has a much better shot of making it than the Niners do. And it's not even that the Niners are a bad team. They're just beaten to shit. This is just 2020 all over again. That's been the storyline. And looking at the Bears, they haven't won a game on the road yet this year. Have not. First game without Matt Eberflus. First game with Thomas Brown as your head coach, the interim head coach. And that's why I'm going with Chicago. Give me the Bears. The interim head coach bump is going to happen again, just like it does every year. Every time it happens, the interim head coach gets a lot of momentum. The team starts playing that much harder. And look, Thomas Brown, ever since he came in, when he showed up as the offense coordinator, offense looked pretty decent. The offense looked pretty good. I'll say it. I know. I was wrong. I'll be the first to say that I was wrong about Thomas Brown, especially from what he did in Carolina. I was a little bit wrong. Offense looks better with Thomas Brown as the head coach, or was the offense coordinator.
Now
the head coach, interim head coach. Will I say that he's going to do great as the head coach? No, but give me the interim bump this week. Give me the Bears.
Yeah, I like Thomas Brown as the offensive coordinator, and they may keep him there if things go well right now. And I don't think he'll end up being the full-time head coach next year.
No.
But as an offensive coordinator with what he's done with Caleb Williams over the past couple of weeks, I agree with you on the interim head coach bump. It always ends up working out. At least helps them elevate their play. The 49ers have been playing very suspect ball. I think they have a very surprising game, an offensive explosion from Caleb Williams, who is starting to look more and more like himself earlier on this season, where he was actually having a pretty good year. I think that's going to continue. And I think we're going to get a good Bears game. And yeah, I'll take the Bears too.
All right, CJ, you know what to do. You know what to do. Say it. Say it. You're with us.
No, I am not.
Shit.
Sure. Oh, yeah, Thomas Brown on the offense. Now, that's all well and good, Chris.
Damn.
But are we forgetting, perhaps, that there is a another side of the ball, perhaps even a third if you count special teams like I do? Eberflus was a defensive-minded head coach. He was literally Matt Nagy with a defensive sheen. And I don't know how the Bears' defense is going to react to this. I mean, sure, Jaquan Brisker might be happy, but being happy and playing well are obviously very different things, Lane Johnson. You know, I'm kidding. If you know the lore, you know the lore. But I know the Niners are injured, but the Bears' defense is just so suspect. And I feel like the Niners have enough scraped together on defense to at least, I won't say stifle the Bears, but at least keep them in check. It's going to be an ugly game. I wouldn't be shocked if it's like a 21-20 game, but I'm still going with the Niners strictly because you still have Kittle, you still have Debo. I want to see what the rookie Isaac Garendo out of Louisville can do. And Purdy's back. And honestly, if this were like a second or third year Caleb Williams, I would be slamming the Bears button. But it is not.
Bears.
No.
Rounding out the week 14 slate, Monday Night Football, Bengals, Cowboys. And look, the reason this game never got flexed out is because of the Simpsons telecast or simulcast, whatever the hell you want to call it. And you know what? Whatever. I'll live with it. I get to see Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, C.D. Lamb on primetime. Whatever. I will live with that, I guess. The thing I don't get is, so the reasoning being is that they had already made all the illustrations for The Simpsons. What I don't get is that The Simpsons is a Fox show. This game is being telecasted by a Disney-run organization. That doesn't make sense.
The Simpsons are Disney affiliates. Their show is literally on Disney Plus, which you know.
Is it? Oh, is
yeah.
it?
Yeah, bro, I love The Simpsons. I watch The Simpsons.
I actually didn't know that.
Simpsons to me, buddy. Okay. I know you are. What?
Okay. Hand up. Hand up. I was misinformed.
No, like they're literally on Disney Plus, like right now. If you have Disney Plus, like go look up The Simpsons and then it's there.
Okay, fair enough. You know, I had ideology wise, you'd think that like Disney and Fox would be butting heads about that, but
they both love money. Come on, everyone does.
True. This is a money grab. All right, Bengals. That's it.
Two teams that had playoff expectations, and it now we're seeing the opposite of what they were supposed to be. But the Bengals on offense look awesome still. And we've talked this topic to death about Joe Burrow, but he is going to go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time to never win a Super Bowl.
It's a bit early, but okay.
Axe.
And like he's at the point where he's rivaling Dan Marino for how good that he really has been. So because he threw for 3 touchdowns, that put him at 30 touchdowns on this season. That's 3 out of the last 4 seasons where he's thrown for 30 or more touchdown passes. He's going to end up throwing 4,500 yards. So when you look at how he has done, it's almost impressive to see how this Bengals team has wasted him. In the same way that the Saints wasted Drew Brees, in the same way that the Dolphins wasted Dan Marino, we're going to be looking back at this Bengals team and saying, how the hell did you not win a Super Bowl with this guy? Now, maybe you turn it around, but the reason I am so quick to write him off for the next 5 to 10 years is because look at how much of their talent is about to leave. They're not going to have T. Higgins next year. You might as well book it. He's not going to be there. Trey Hendrickson's probably gone. And the longer they go without signing Ja'Marr Chase to a long-term extension, the more I think maybe there's a chance he's out too. And at that point, you literally have nothing for your franchise quarterback. What the hell are you doing over there? How did you not manage to sign any of your star talent in this time? You've kicked the can so far down the road that you have to sign all of them at once, which you won't be able to do. You may get none of them. Give me the Bengals, though.
Chris, Adam, rejoice, for I am now completing the trifecta. You can breathe this time. You can breathe. Trust me. But
full on Raider style.
Yeah.
I'm not explaining that one, guys. If you know, you know. We're not getting into that. But let me explain. I know the Bengals defense is bad, but come on, you have to beat Cooper Rush, right? He's okay. Don't get me wrong. The Bengals defense is bad, so Rush is gonna get his. I mean, he looked decent against the Giants. I don't know. Either way, it should be the Bengals. I think the Bengals defense is going to – I mean, Bengals offense is going to run laps about the around the Cowboys. That much, I think, is set in stone. However, it's going to be up to Cooper Rush and the gang to catch up with – and to be honest, I don't think they can. So, let's say you give me the Bengals.
Nice. Oh, geez. Week 14, we're done with that. Well, not done yet, because we're going to end up talking about some of these games on Tuesday. But all right, that's pretty much all the scheduled content we have, unless you guys wanted to throw anything out there. Real quick, I don't know if you guys saw the recent rule change that the NFL made, not towards the game, but more towards drug testing. So they hampered down on the marijuana shit, right? And they said, they basically said, you can have a little bit of weed in your system and we won't fuck you over for it. but they're now going to fine you $15,000 every time that you post that you're getting randomly drug tested on social media. You guys see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's freedom of speech taken away. Freedom of speech taken away. But that is all the scheduled content for us today. Do you two have anything else you want to add before we head out?
I'm good.
I'm fine.
We thank you for bearing with us for a long episode of the Fumble Rooski podcast, but this was a good episode. A lot of topics that had to be discussed, especially with the Lions. I'll blame myself for that because we almost talked to death about the Lions and Packers and Dan Campbell for almost half an hour. I will take accountability for that, gentlemen. But we thank you for joining us for another Friday edition of the Fumble Rooski podcast. New episode coming out Tuesday at 7:30 and, of course, Fridays at 5. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. And we also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Be sure to follow our Instagram, FumbleRooski_podcast, and our TikTok, FumbleRooskiPod, to keep up with the pod and latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, for myself, Chris Kostich, Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros, this has been a Friday edition of the Fumble Rooski podcast. We'll see you on Tuesday. Over and out.